comics,
movies,
music,
video games,
technology,
Blu-ray,
television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
I'm going to say until next time, so long, and then you say and goodbye, all right?
Okay, can we try that a couple times?
Okay, sure, okay. Until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
Until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
Until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
Okay.
All right, okay, I'm not going to forget this, I promise you.
Okay. We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe! Good morning!
Out Now is a film podcast which has Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We also bring in a little discussion about the latest movie trailers, box office results and predictions, a retro review that has to do with the main feature of the week, games, and other fun stuff. The main feature of the week is War Horse, Steven Spielberg's second movie of 2011. And this is episode 40 for Out Now with Aaron and Abe. Joining us to discuss War Horse, we have from Fast Film Reviews and a man you can paint in black and white and call the artist, Mark Hoban.
Hi, everyone.
And from award contenders and one man I'm not afraid to call a real Iron Lady, Mark Johnson.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Glad to be back.
And since we have two Marks and Aaron and Abe, we're having Marky Mark and Double A Batteries today. That's our show subtitle. Okay, so a few announcements. I hope you all enjoyed our recent bonus episode sweep that we had over basically December. Since we all had hectic schedules, we did our best to, kind of fill in the gaps there. We did our Tintin show, our Girl with the Dragon Tattoo show, we did a couple shows for the Walking Dead TV podcast, our sister podcast, which we enjoyed doing. That was fun fill in for. And we did our best of 2011 show. So we really did a lot.
It was pretty packed.
Having hectic schedules made us do more shows than less, so hope everyone enjoyed it, and if you did enjoy it, feel free to go to iTunes and give us some ratings or reviews. It's always cool to get ratings and reviews on iTunes, and it helps our show out. It's, really simple to do, so.
This is our first non-bonus episode of the year, I think.
Yeah, this episode has a number. It's not a bonus episode, it's episode 40, and yeah, it's our first official 2012 real show, so, stay tuned. Yeah. So some of you guys survived. We still have our marks. I mean, Jordan died, but
whoa. He didn't actually die.
Jordan's fine. He'll be back soon. So I mentioned our Best of 2011 show, which brings me to a small announcement that I'm going to make. I don't do this often, but I've seen a movie a number of times that I really, really enjoy, and it's enough that I'm actually going to shift it in my top 10 position, and it's a pretty major shift because it's actually taken my number one position. As many know, I had Drive as my number one film of 2011, but honestly, Abe and Mark, you'll like this. I've seen Hugo three times now, and I'm moving it to my number one movie of 2011. I honestly just love Hugo so much, and... every time I watch that movie, and I feel like it's a movie that I'm gonna keep admiring years to come. And I love Drive. That makes Drive my number two. So it's still a great movie, and I love watching Drive, and I can't wait to watch it again and own it and watch it whatever. But I really love Hugo, and I really want to just keep recognizing it. It's the movie I love talking about every time I bring up Hugo. So
what number did you have it at before?
Seven.
Oh wow.
That was before I saw it for the good time. Movie. But yeah. And yeah, I can't recommend enough seeing it while it's still in theaters in 3D, just because of the way Scorsese has made that movie. It's just a great movie to see in.
Have you seen it in 3D every time?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Okay.
I've made it a point to do so. So moving on, we haven't done this in a while. Let's do some Know Everybody, where we ask each other a few questions, try to know everybody, and set the tone for this podcast. Let's see, I'll go first, and since we're doing Spielberg's War Horse, my questions are fairly Spielberg related. Mark Hoban. Mark Hoban, can you name a Spielberg scene from any of his films that really got to you emotionally?
You know what? The scene that I think got to me the most emotionally, and a lot of this has to do with the time that I saw it, but I watched E.T. when I was very young, and that scene kind of near the end where Elliot finds E.T. lying kind of in the riverbed where he has been kind of left discarded, that scene probably affected me more, at least at that time, than any, you know, death scene or person like in peril, sickness, than any scene up until that point. And I think I've always kind of gone back to that moment whenever I see any kind of a sad moment in a film when someone dies or there's someone sick. And that affected me more probably than anything. So I still think it probably would be sad to me, but probably a lot of it had to do with when I saw it at the time, you know, how old I was. That's probably the most emotional.
Yeah, that's just like after I watched Super 8, I watched E.T. again. And yeah, that's a scene. That's tough. There's some rough stuff in the late second act of E.T. when they're like, you know, before things get all. That has some tough scenes.
It wasn't just a human being there. He was millions of miles away from home, and he's lying there on a strange planet, discarded. I lost it.
There's two scenes I can think of that came to mind just because I kind of like this question. The first is when Adam Goldberg gets knifed in the chest in Saving Private Ryan. That scene is tough. That's not necessarily emotionally. Yeah. That's more like a visceral kind of thing, I guess, where it's just that is a rough death scene. Like, right. It's not even begging. It's not even like it's Adam Goldberg too. It's like a funny guy where you're just like, oh, that's terrible. It's all slow. Yeah, that's one. The other one, and this came out. This is just like something I just thought of. Was like, oh, this. I think of this a lot. It's Temple of Doom. It's where Indiana Jones slaps Short Round in the face, and it's just like you've spent this whole movie, and it's kind of, you know, it's buddy, and they're good, they're like friends, and I mean, and then he gets like dark Indy, and he just slaps Short Round, and then Short Round like starts crying. He's like, Indy, I love you, and then he burns him. It is just
great Short Round impersonation.
Like in the midst of Temple of Doom of all movies, somehow he managed to do it. Like he gets that little character moment in there where it's just like it gets you. It's like, ah, oh, Spielberg could do this, makes it work. Anyway, Mark, you can go.
Okay, so Mark, since we're doing War Horse this week, what is your favorite film about an animal?
Okay, that's kind of similar to the question I'm going to ask, but my favorite film about an animal? Well, I'd have to probably say Jaws, since...
Oh, cool.
It's a good choice.
Stick with Spielberg even more there. Jaws is... I'd probably have to go that route. Nothing warm and cuddly like Old Yeller. I'm going to go the horror route of Jaws.
I'm wearing my Jaws shirt right now, actually.
So you mean it wasn't Air Bud?
Mine was a Space Air Bud or whatever that was.
Or that, what was that, Kangaroo Jack? Or
Kangaroo
Jack. All right, I'll go, let's see here, Abe.
Yeah.
Again, sticking with the warhorse theme, what was your favorite animal from a film this year? Since we had a few animals from, you know, like Beginners and The Artist, the dogs from those films, and the horse, Warhorse.
When you mentioned Beginners, that's a cool mention. But could it be animated? Because I was really digging Snowy. Yeah, Snowy was really awesome.
There you go.
In Tintin.
Way to stick with Tintin. What's this for Spielberg?
Another.
Oh, yeah, I didn't realize. But
our homage to Spielberg.
I'd say Snowy, Uggy from The Artist, and Rango. Those would be my answers.
Yeah.
Aaron, it's not the dolphin from The Dolphin Tale?
That's... Hey-o. That one, huh?
When he lost that fin, I just, you know, I thought it was...
Okay, Aaron.
Yeah.
Better animal acting. That wolf from The Thing in the original. I mean, well, I guess in the Carpenter.
Yeah.
Or the horse in War Horse.
I'd say that. Well, I mean, War Horse is all about the horse. There's so much horse in there. But, I mean, what does it really do? It just rides, right? just kind of, it gets stubborn.
Yeah, it just acts like a horse.
Just acts like a horse's ass. So I'm going to say The Wolf and the Thing, just because it's really good.
Yeah, it was really good.
There's a foreboding sense to how that wolf acts. It knows there's something hiding inside of it. All right, Mark Johnson.
Okay.
What are you looking forward to most about Steven Spielberg's Lincoln?
Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis, period. Anytime, he's probably right up there with Bogart and Brando as my favorite actor of all time. So anytime he's in a movie, I'm first in line. So very excited to see what he does there.
I'd say Daniel Day-Lewis's use of the hat.
Or that. Right. All right. Let's go, since we're going to talk about the Globes later, I'll go with Mark. What is there any one award you'd like to see go to any one in particular tonight?
If you want to say best song for Romeo and Juliet, you can.
I know that song too. I would actually like to see, since I sort of think that George Clooney is going to win, I would actually like to see Brad Pitt win for Moneyball. I really like that film, and I think he was really good in it, and I thought his performance was more understated. And it's nice to see that he is getting a lot of nominations in the different awards, but I'd like to see him win it.
Yeah.
So I don't suspect he will, but it would be nice if he did. So the element of surprise would be kind of nice.
Cool.
Yeah, you say that, and I agree. I think he's very good in it. I think it is understated. I kind of I think Clooney's fairly understated in that role too. I don't think it's very showy in The Descendants.
No, you're right. And actually, I thought Clooney was very good in The Descendants.
Yeah, so I think because we both have very similar opinions about The Descendants.
I wouldn't be, you know.
Yeah, you would be mad or anything. Yeah.
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, and I like the fact that Clooney was not the hip, suave, cool Clooney, but more of a regular, everyday guy. So, yeah. But I just feel like Clooney seems to be the one that has the edge. And I like the idea of Brad Pitt winning for that film.
Cool.
Okay, Abe.
Yes.
Warhorse, Black Stallion, Secretariat, or Seabiscuit get in a fight? Who wins?
Well, Seabiscuit already has a disadvantage because he's blind in one eye. No, that's the writer. My bad. Tobey Maguire.
Wait, Seabiscuit? No, but Seabiscuit gets injured, so he's not the best of the rest.
I'm going to say, I don't know. I mean, I was going to say Black Stallion straight out. But I was like, that Warhorse guy, I mean, he walks right through, like, a chain fence.
Exactly.
Barbed wire, yeah.
Yeah, like, rows of it. So I guess I'm going to go with Warhorse. He seems, I mean, he was a really beautiful-looking horse. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, Joey seems stubborn to me.
Yeah, he seems like a jerk.
He seems like more of a stubborn horse than one that's really capable. Secretariat had a huge heart, and that thing. Do you know how much he won that race by? I mean, honestly, Secretariat would kill these people.
Real world versus acting. So
if there is a murder mystery movie and it started all these horses, I think that Secretariat was the killer all along.
You'd probably be right. Yeah. Mark Johnson, who would you rather have as your sidekick? Joey, the warhorse, or Snowy from Tintin?
You can't ride Snowy.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Snowy in that case, because he seems to make for the better partner, whereas Warhorse just kind of, Joey just kind of steals the show, I think. So I got to be number one.
What time period would this be in? Because if there's no cars around.
Right, that's a good point. I'll still take Snowy.
Yeah, good choice.
Okay, so that's going to wrap it up for Know Everybody, and I think we all sufficiently know everybody a little bit more. And, yeah, so with all that done, let's get to movie trailer talk, where we try to discuss a couple of the latest movie trailers. It's been a while since we did, like, a whole one of these segments. But let's see, the first trailer we can discuss is Men in Black 3, the latest Men in Black film, starring Will Smith, Tommy Lee Jones, and I believe is still directed by Barry Levinson, and is most like, no, it is in 3D, of course. So this one, from what I can tell from the teaser, this one has J and K returning, and something happens to K, and J needs to tie these letters. J, Jay needs to time travel back in time to find young Kay, who's played by a dead ringer Josh Brolin for Tommy Lee Jones. So, with all that said, I guess, what are you guys' thoughts on the first Men in Black movies, and what do you think about this new one coming up? I'll start with Mark J. As I said, Jay, you see what I did there?
I did see that.
It's been about 10 years or so now, right, since the second one?
Yeah, it was like 2002.
Yes.
Yeah, I honestly have very little memory of the second one. The first one I enjoyed. I remember it being entertaining, but
there's a reason why you didn't remember the second one.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Nod your head.
I'll probably have to go back and watch the first two over again before seeing the new one. It looks fun. No, right, exactly. It looks fun though. Brolin looks like he pulls off a pretty good impersonation of
somehow in the 5 seconds he's on screen, he's like, it's like, right. Oh, I get this. All right.
Right. I have to ask, is his voice dubbed or is that really his voice?
I wondered about that too.
I think Josh Brolin's talented enough that he can pull it up.
Yeah, I think that was his voice.
Wow. Then I'm impressed with that. I thought you know, like you said, you mentioned it's been 10 years. Men in Black 2, I do remember the film, and I remember not liking it that much. Nowhere near as much as I loved the first one, which I thought was quite an outstanding film. And, you know, Barry Sonnenfeld, I don't know. I mean,
I said Levinson, my bad. Barry Sonnenfeld.
Oh, I didn't even notice. Yeah. But yeah, Sonnenfeld, you know, the last film he directed was RV. That's all I'll say about that. But the trailer looks kind of amusing, and, you know, I might see it, but it's just, it's not high on my list.
Yeah, I wasn't too keen on seeing it the first time, the trailer the first time. And then I think I warmed up about the second time when I was kind of more just feeling it and just going with it. It's kind of taken a while for the third one to come out, so I don't know if people are going to be, like, you know, going crazy over it. But I do really enjoy the movie posters for this Men in Black 3.
Really? You don't think it's pretty, like, an eyesore to stare at those?
No, they're clever. I like it.
All right. Yeah, I really like the first Men in Black. The second one, the best thing I can say about the second one is that's the movie where I fell in love with Rosario Dawson in. But nothing about the second one really stands out. I really hate the ending of the second one too. That's something that always bugged me. But I think it's the power of Will Smith's charisma that I'm like, all right, I can see another third Men in Black movie. I can do that. And he has not aged since Men in Black 1, apparently, because he looks exactly the same.
He still looks good in that film.
He looks like Will Smith.
It's the Illuminati, man.
It's the Illuminati. he's whipping his hair. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to be like, oh yeah, it's a new Will Smith action comedy movie. That's kind of where I'm at, opposed to I really hated that second one. And yeah, I'm curious how it will do, but it's a Big Willie weekend. It's a Big Willie Memorial Day weekend, so I'm sure the interest will be there enough, I guess. Anyway, let's move on to our next trailer. It is for The Hunger Games, a popular young adult novel series about, well, it's basically Battle Royale for kids. Well, Battle Royale is kids, so scratch that. It's just the American version of Battle Royale. You have a number of kids from different areas in a future-ish kind of setting, and they're all chosen to face off to the death against each other in a big arena game setting known as The Hunger Games. And this one stars Jennifer Lawrence as Katniss, the lead female character in this film, and among a host of other actors, actually, like Elizabeth Banks, Lenny Kravitz, Woody Harrelson, Donald Sutherland. Yes, I said Lenny Kravitz second. I know there's a lot of anticipation for this movie. It's kind of, I don't want to say it's the next Twilight, but it is a popular book series that a lot of teens are going to go and see. But with that said, I know this has higher regard than the Twilight book series. So, with all that in mind, Marks, Abe, what do we think?
Well, I just got the book, the trilogy, for Christmas. So I just started the Hunger Games just to kind of get a feel for it early. I'm a big Jennifer Lawrence fan, so I'm excited to see what she can do. And I like what Gary Ross has done previously. Pleasantville was one of my favorite movies.
I like how we could say from the director of Dave in Pleasantville comes the Hunger Games.
he did Seabiscuit too, right?
Yep, yep.
Yes, yeah. He did.
A little tie into War Horse there. Yeah, I'm excited to see it. See, the release date kind of scares me that it was March rather than over the summer. I don't know if I don't know if that matters.
That mid-March date is generally like, that's like the summer light date, where it's like, summer's crowded, might as well have, that's like, you know, like 300 out in the summer, or sorry, in March. Battle of LA is a bad example. The Battle of LA came out in March. It's kind of like the summer the summer action movie that comes out in March kind of position.
Right.
I'm not really familiar with the book series, but when I see the trailer, it's very reminiscent of some of these other films like Logan's Run and The Running Man.
Yeah, so, exactly.
And I don't understand the idea of like children fighting to the death. I mean, in Logan's Run, they had to reach the age of 30 at least, but here it's like, really? Why? They're going to have to somehow explain to me why people would want to see children fight to the death. It just sounds a little odd, but I mean,
there's a reason.
What's that?
Yeah.
Okay. There is.
I'm sure there is. It's a dystopia and all that, but you know, as long as it can bring something original to it, the cast looks amazing. And actually the look of the trailer looks, you know, quite good. I mean, it has a really like quality production, and it looks like a few of the actors actually get to sort of ham it up in these like, you know, roles, kind of like Richard Dawson in Running Man, really like get to like overact and everything. So I kind of like that sort of, I like that. I think it's called for in these kind of films. So I'm definitely optimistic about it.
I'm not feeling it. I'm just going to put it right out there. I'm just not really feeling this trailer, not really feeling the movie. I've heard that really, really good things about the books, so I hope that I'm wrong, but yeah, I just wasn't feeling it.
Just to correct myself, I said Gary Ross directed Dave. He didn't direct Dave, he wrote Dave, but he made Pleasantville and Seabiscuit. Right? He wrote Dave and Big. I thought he directed more movies. He's only directed these three so far. But anyway, in regards to Hunger Games, I have read the first book. Which is good. Okay. I enjoyed it. Knowing that I was like, well, this just looks like Battle Royale, so I gave it a read, and I was like, this is pretty good, actually. And with that said, watching the trailer, I like the trailer quite a bit. I think it does enough to establish what the movie's about, shows off some of the cast, and doesn't give away much in terms of where things are going to go beyond the basic premise and some, you know, slick-looking shots. And I'm curious to see what Gary Ross can do with this movie of all directors. And I know Steven Soderbergh's apparently like second unit director on this movie, which is like a weird thing to happen, but it's fact apparently. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to see Hunger Games. Well, that's a little trailer talk. And with all of that out of the way, I guess we can get to our review for War Horse.
England is at war! We are at war!
I promise you that I'll look after him. If I can, I'll return him to your care.
He's my horse, sir.
Can you imagine flying over a war? And you know you can never look down. You have to look forward, or you'll never get home.
All right, so that was a little bit of the trailer for Steven Spielberg's War Horse, the new World War I period drama starring Joey the Horse, but it stars a number of actors, including Jeremy Irvine as the lead boy, Peter Mullen, David Thewlis, Benedict Timothy Carleton Cumberbatch,
bravo,
thank you, Tom Hiddleston, Emily Watson. There's a lot of nice character actors, but this is the film about Joey. Actually, we follow the journeys of Joey, a horse who we see from birth go on to basically come under the care of many different owners. The story's kind of divided up into vignettes, essentially, where you have it starts out in the care of a boy and his family on a farm, and then moves on to World War I and becomes the property of many people during the war, and the through line involves the boy trying to find his horse, essentially. But yeah, we kind of follow how Joey, in some ways, maybe sometimes tangentially, affects the lives of many throughout around World War I, and that's the basic premise of the film. Mark Johnson, what did you think of War Horse?
You know, I wanted to like it a little bit more than I ended up liking it. It was anytime Steven Spielberg makes a film, you know, I'll be one of the first to see it. But I guess I was expecting something less family-oriented, and I think that was probably my mistake going in, because it is, they make no mistake about it from the very get-go, that it is a family film. There's, you know, moments that might come off cheesy if you're expecting anything else. Early on, especially with the Peter Mullen's character and the boy taking on the horse, etc. But aside from the over sentimental use of storyline, I think what they did technically was pretty fantastic. I enjoyed the cinematography. I think the sound of the film was maybe its strongest point. And John Williams' score is, you know, typical great John Williams swelling score. So I like the film a lot. I just didn't love it. And yeah, that's about where I stand on it.
Mark Hoban.
I really loved it. I thought that it was sort of a grand saga and sort of the classic Hollywood tradition. And I think Steven Spielberg was really working kind of at the peak of his powers in terms of cinematography and music. And I realize there are other people responsible for these things. But, I mean, under his guidance, I thought he did a really masterful job of kind of in getting your emotions involved. And yes, it's very sentimental, and it is based on a children's novel, so it wasn't surprising to me that it did have a very sort of family-oriented, you know, gist to it. Yeah. But I thought that it was well done, and I liked the way there was lots of little vignettes where the horse kind of passes hands from one person to another, and I pretty much actually enjoyed every single vignette that he involved in. I liked all of his adventures, and I thought there was sort of a mixture of, you know, the harsh reality of war mixed with, you know, sentiment. And I thought it worked for me. So overall, I really enjoyed it. And yeah, it was a little bit sentimental in parts.
Right.
But I kind of ate it up. I was there along for the ride, and it didn't bother me.
Along for the ride. Well, I wish it was called "We Bought a Horse." No, I don't wish that. But Mark, yeah, I was kidding. I actually, Mark Hoban, I completely agree with everything you just had to say. Actually, it has very melodramatic parts, but they all worked for me. I think the movie's gorgeous. The cinematography by Janusz Kaminski is really impressive. Just like there's, yes. As cool as some of the great wide shots are of some of, like, and there are some really great sweeping shots in this movie. There's stuff like, there's a camera placed on top of a plow at one point, and that's just, I haven't seen that before, and that's a really cool shot of just like a plow going into the ground, and I thought that was, there's little fake touches like that that are really cool, as well as just all the little Spielberg camera touches where, like, there's a windmill and it's used in an appropriate way that fits the tone of the film. And
I know exactly what
you know what I'm talking about. There's
it's
shot.
It's a harsh scene.
Right. It's a harsh scene that uses a windmill to great effect. Yeah, and there's a scene involving a lot of war horses charging into battle, and as they do, there's shots of like the horses charging through a campsite, and there's like a camera inside a tent, and like a horse sweeps through it, and you see like the papers fly in the air, and people fall back. It's just these little touches where like this is seeing Spielberg at work here. This is seeing him like apply his kind of style to a war scene or an action sequence, and it's just like, it's nice to see these kind of shots. Along with, yes, there's a lot of sentiment, but I like seeing all these different characters. I liked how the story is divided into vignettes. I thought it was kind of a neat approach to this kind of story, and yeah, it's not, I wasn't going in thinking this is going to be another Private Ryan or Munich. I was thinking, okay, this is a PG-13 World War I kind of family oriented drama, and I can get to kind of what I can compare it to in my retro review as to how I can relate it to things that are better or worse, but I really dug it. I think John Williams goes a little bit over the top with the score at times, and the end is particularly a big moment of that, including the lighting in that scene. There's a great old-fashioned
awesome
way
lighting.
That it ends, but
it recalls another film.
Oh, yes. Yes, it does.
Very explicitly.
Yeah, and there's some other key sequences that I really like to discuss when we get into this more. But yeah, overall, I really, I was, I really enjoyed this movie, and I was a little surprised at seeing, like, this is, like, one of the more controversial movies to like, apparently, over, like, just because of how sentimental the film is. But with all that said, I'll let Abe go, then we can talk more about that later.
Sure.
I'm in Mark Johnson's boat, and it wasn't that I didn't like it, that it was good, a lot of the technical aspects, but I guess I was not really digging how a lot of the... I liked the vignettes, but I wasn't digging how it was pretty superficial. It was like, you know, the father or the grandfather and his granddaughter kind of thing, and then the two brothers. I mean, that two brothers one, that was a nice vignette. And then there was like the horse guy at the end, the German horse guy, and it was just really ridiculous line of "run," and I was like, "What? This is not making me feel any better about this movie." And then why would the tank be targeting the horse anyway? really one of the largest things I thought of was, like, in the beginning when they're first establishing, you know, the tone of the film, the mood, I was like, this is exactly how I would think of, like, the sad, deplorable life of Samwise Gamgee. Like, it's just, you know, his wife is yelling at him, he can't do it, the drunk, he lives in the Shire still, he can't grow any crops. And so it's just, man, this is exactly
how I really Sam want was. To see this spin-off series now involving Sam, because he's, like, growing older and he's a drunk.
He's, like, a miserable guy. He owes people money.
None of this would have happened if Frodo stayed.
And, yeah, I just thought that the direction, the art direction and beautiful cinematography, but it was just a flat in terms of storyline. So I can't really give it, like, a super high praise. It was good, but it just wasn't great.
Yeah. What do you guys think about the... there was one scene in particular for me, and I don't want to... I'll try and avoid spoilers here, but there's one scene in particular where everything kind of just stops, and it goes into this... Yeah, it is.
The no man's land scene?
Yeah, the anti-war message that he gets there. And I, that scene in particular, for some reason with me, kind of just made me go, what? Like, I just didn't buy...
The tank scene?
No.
Right after the tank scene.
Yeah, yeah.
He's caught in the wire.
Yeah.
It's, the no man's land meeting scene. That's the scene that I put in my notes, because I was going to bring it up, because that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Everything about that scene of how... it takes place during the kind of the Christmas ceasefire. That's kind of the setting of that, and there's logic applied to why there wouldn't just be constant fighting happening in that scene. But I enjoyed that scene. I enjoyed how the conversation between two different parties played out as they were trying to work out a situation. I enjoyed how that played out. I liked the tone of that scene. I liked the energy of it. I liked the what's behind these two parties' motivations of neither of them are there because they have strong opinions against the other. It's more if they're just doing a duty.
A job, yeah.
Yeah, and for that reason, I liked how that worked out. I liked the...
Did you recognize the actor in that scene?
Yes, I did, actually, the American...
From Rock'n'Rolla?
Rock'n'Rolla.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, I liked that scene in particular.
I liked that scene because I think it was one of the more, I guess, adult scenes in terms of, well, you know, it's not about the kid anymore and not about the horse. It's kind of just about how people are pretty normal, and then war just kind of, you have to be on your country's side kind of thing. So, you know, it was kind of tongue-in-cheek when he's asking for some extra equipment and, like, 10 sets of equipment come flying in. But I think I liked it. I appreciated that scene for what it was saying, and also just visually it was actually really nice, too. There's a lot of, like, fog play, and it was just actually a really nice setup.
Yeah, I think I'm alone then with it just came off a little bit heavy-handed with the message, and I like, there's a lot of anti-war films I like you know, All Quiet on the Western Front or Passive Glory. You know, there's some great, you know, anti-war films that
you just
do
named
little...
like two of the best. Yeah, yeah.
Passive Glory is an amazing film, but there's not many movies about World War I. That's not a war that's well represented in film compared to, like, World War II, fairly obvious reason, I guess, because World War I's an ugly war. It's a really ugly war. Yeah, there's a lot. It's not a... a lot of people died in that war. For reasons. Like, World War II seems that that's like the war where you kind of get it. You're like, God,
right.
Hitler's taking shit over. We got to stop this bad man. World War I's a little more. There's a lot of tricky gray area in World War I. It's like a really kind of nasty war that happened, and a lot of nasty deaths happened. But so when you see films about World War I kind of look forward to just because it's an interesting one to cover. And Paths of Glory in particular, that's a great movie. I love that movie from Kubrick. That's a with Kirk Douglas. That's a really.
It's one of those Kubrick's films that doesn't get as much talk about.
I know, yeah.
It's wonderful.
It recently had a Criterion Blu-ray release, and I immediately snatched that up because I really like that movie quite a bit. But yeah, that. What are some other World War I movies? Yeah, Fight on the Restaurant Front. A Very Long Engagement from the director of Amelie, I can't pronounce his name right because I don't have it in front of me.
But Legends of the Fall takes place, I think. There's brief war scenes of World War I there.
Brad Pitt.
So Lawrence of Arabia has to do with
his
experiences during World War I. I was just going to mention, just as far as like different things that they present in the film. I really liked when the horse fell into the hands of the Germans, and then Joey, the horse, met that other black horse. And their relationship, I actually found very affecting. I mean, normally it's hard to get, drama or a relationship when you're not dealing with people. Mm-hmm. And I thought actually the relationship between the black horse and I don't remember if he had a name, but it was kind of a bromance that they had. I found it kind of affecting, surprisingly. Yeah. I didn't expect to enjoy that, but I thought it was well presented.
The second they introduced the black horse, the way it shot, I kept thinking, like, Sam Jackson's going to say, who's the new guy?
I think what they did as far as pulling off the performances of the horses was pretty incredible. I think the best performances in the film come from the horses themselves. I think that's kind of what holds me back a little bit from enjoying it completely was I didn't buy into Mullen's performance or Irvine?
Jeremy Irvine.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, in terms of, you're not going to see best actor nominations for this movie, just because, the characters aren't given enough depth that they're fairly two-dimensional.
But, yeah.
You've got Emily Watson, David Thewlis, Benedict Cumberbatch, Tom Hiddleston. You got some really great actors, and none of them really stand out that much. I mean, I think they do good work.
Yeah, I agree with that. They do good work with what they're given to do.
Right.
I think Tom Hiddleston. When I first saw Thor, that was my favorite part was Hiddleston from as Loki or.
Yes, as Loki. But, I believe Abe agrees with you on that.
Too. Yeah, I agree with you. I was really a big fan of that.
And I didn't know who he was or anything like that before that. But I didn't really like Thor too much, but he really stood out to me. And then seeing him again in Midnight in Paris.
Yes,
and,
he was F. Scott Fitzgerald in that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm real excited to see his career continue. He's been great in everything I've seen him in. So,
yeah, and Abe, you can see him as Loki again in Avengers. So.
Coming out this summer, 2012.
But I think Tom Hiddleston comes the closest, I guess, to getting the most out of a character and the small time that he has on in the film.
Which vignette did you guys find most compelling?
Okay, that's a good question.
Probably the two brothers.
Yeah, that one was pretty rough. Yeah,
that was rough.
I also did like the Tom Hiddleston, Benedict Cumberbatch.
That's kind of where I'm at.
Officer. Yeah, yeah.
Like the three officers. Yeah, that one was pretty. That was a devastating scene the way that Spielberg got it.
It shows kind of old warfare and new warfare taking place as we have war horses leading a charge versus. Oh, we have machine guns.
And then I like the German officer's explanation at the end. Like, I was like, yeah, didn't Benedict Cumberbatch think about that? So, I mean, they were clearly
Benedict Timothy Carlton Cumberbatch.
Yeah. So, I mean, he clearly knew that they were outnumbered. So I was like, didn't he think about this? But I don't know. I guess when the Kool-Aid is flowing, everyone's drinking.
And as cheesy as it is, I did like the plow stuff early on. He worked hard, and the raid happened, and then he got the plow. And
the whole entire village showed up out of nowhere. Where did that come from?
David Thewlis is playing like a huge jerk the whole time. Like, well, I don't know. There's so much stubbornness going on in that early scene too, with the auction and oh my god! Like, I like Peter Mullen a lot. I think he's a very good character actor, but man, just making the wrong decisions in this movie.
Right.
I mean, yeah. How are you gonna pay for that, you idiot? For that scene, I really didn't like the mom in that scene. She's just chilling out upstairs. She realizes there's a crowd, and she just knits. And then later, she's like, "That's my son. Stay away from him."
Hey, don't Emily Watson. She held up that that knitting needle up to David Dula's. Like, you back off.
Yeah, but I mean, like, she didn't do anything when there was the crowd gathering, and I was like, man,
she waited for the time to be right.
It was building.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
have you guys been following the award trail for War Horse right now, and how it's shockingly being at, left off a lot of lists? The biggest surprise was it got left off the American Society of Cinematographers nominees, which was to me shocking because I thought it would be between Kaminsky. Is that how you say his name?
Yes, Kaminsky. Yeah.
I thought it'd be between him and Lubezki for Tree of Life when it came down to Oscar, but. They got left off for that list.
But to add to that, I believe I read this, I believe Kaminsky resigned from the cinematographers.
Guild.
Really?
Yeah, I believe he hasn't been a part of it, so that's why he wasn't.
Yeah, I wonder if that might. Yeah. Why then. Hmm. Yeah, and then the got left off Art Directors Guild. It got left off the Writers Guild, and then the Directors Guild. Surprisingly, went with.
Fincher, right?
Fincher over Spielberg. So it's kind of it was at one point considered one of the favorites to win Best Picture. Now it's looking more like on the edge of even getting in the field.
Well, we don't even talk about Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close anymore. So
right, exactly. Yeah,
it's weird because like I really love this movie. I don't love this movie. I really like this movie. I think
you love it. I think it's you're a horse lover.
I think. I'm not really. I don't really particularly like horses, actually. But
But do horses love you?
Camels don't, and they're in the same family, so I hold them all accountable. But I really like this movie. I think it's very good. So it's kind of weird that I don't think it needs to get as that much awards praise in terms of like I don't think it needs to be nominated for Best Picture necessarily. But I do like this movie quite a bit.
I think positive buzz or negative buzz can kill a film. And I think before this film even came out, the expectations were, oh, this is the grand statement of the whole year from Steven Spielberg. And this is going to win Best Picture. And then when it came out, yeah, it wasn't the picture that people were expecting. And so then there was sort of a reaction against it. But if you can kind of just watch it as just sort of a warm, sweet movie, it succeeds in that area.
That's what that's how I kind of been regarding it, and that's why I've been finding it weird that for like of all movies, this is the one where it's being like, well, Spielberg's just making this movie to make you cry, and he has too much heart in it. And it's like that's a problem. Like it's just a good.
I think sometimes what people might react against is seeing the director's hand, and it is sentimental. And for some reason, for me, when I was watching it, it didn't bother me. But I think for some people, they can sort of see, oh, I can see him trying to, you know, I mean, from the very first opening shots, they show the horse being born. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, I can see right now that he's trying to get us to love the horse. It's like, well, we already love horses. It's not like you have to convince us of that. But so I think there's a little bit of that. But you know, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'll definitely need to see it again.
I think I might have to take a second shot at it as well.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't know if anything's really going to change. But I did, but really, I mean, I really enjoyed, not really enjoyed, but I thought it was well-crafted.
Yeah, from the technical aspect, I think this movie's, like, at the very least, I mean, I can understand not loving this movie and liking this movie, but I can't see anyone hating this movie just because of how well it put together it is. Like it's such a great looking movie, and there's so
especially
much,
especially like, you know, the sweeping scenes, but also the war scenes. How, I mean, it's kind of like a Saving Private Ryan kind of stuff, but I mean, it's really just devastating to see that war does cause all this stuff.
There's
death to these little teenage kids. Yeah,
like the trench warfare stuff. That's cool, but cool. It's like the trench warfare. It's well filmed. It's intense. It's really well handled. But the scene of Joey just running through no man's land, that's just great. That's just a great directed scene.
Did it remind you of Artex?
Of Artex.
From the Neverending Story.
The best worst of all time.
Betray you.
Shadowfax, maybe.
Shadowfax. Forgot about Shadowfax.
Alcor. Okay.
But I mean, to go on with your well-filmed scene, there was the part where he's got the grenade, and I was like, wow, that is really fantastic, the way that his hands are super shaking. Like, it's not really those gusto, yeah, I'm going to pull the pin, and there it goes. It's actually really, really tough for him to do, because he's amped up, he's really nervous, he's really scared for his life, and I was just thinking, that was a nice touch. I would never have thought about that, because clearly I have not been to war, so... But it was a nice touch. And to add on to the Samwise thing, his wife's name is Rosie. So there you go. And he was gonna make glue out of Joey in the beginning. Like, I was like, that can't be real. So,
last thing, John Williams score. What did we think of John Williams score in this movie?
I liked it a lot. I know a lot of people have said, you know, over the top rotor, but I liked it. I enjoyed it.
I thought it was really good. It's one of the best things about the film, I think, and one of the things that sets the mood is his score. So it's memorable for sure.
Right.
It sets the mood, all right. That's for sure. It does exactly what it needs to do.
Right.
I wasn't in love with the score. It was like, okay, here it is again. But I like certain tracks a lot. There's a lot, especially during like the war scene. There's a lot of good tracks that are a lot of the battle scene stuff. There's a lot of good. Use of the score. It's mainly just the Joey's theme when it starts to play, basically. Kind of, at some points, I'm like, yeah, I get it. Coming off of his Tintin score, which I pretty fun. I was like, okay, here's the more traditional sweeping epic score, and it's good.
So
yeah.
Here's a question for you guys. What's Adventures of Tintin score or Warhorse score? Where do you stand?
I like the Tintin score.
I'd probably go Warhorse.
I don't think either of them have... Warhorse. I mean, if I heard it, I could probably identify it. No, I can still. I can probably identify either one if I heard.
So, yeah. I feel the opposite. I feel like Warhorse, I can identify, and Adventures of Tintin, I can't even remember the score.
Yeah, I'm there too. Yeah. Like, if you played that Joey theme, I'd be like, oh gosh, like, oh wow, I see beautiful fields and stuff like that. And then with Tintin, I'm just, I can't really recall it. I can't hum it, as we said in the past episode.
I can't hum the Warhorse score either. If I could hear either one, I feel like I'd be able to identify either one. So.
Okay.
Well, with all that in mind, let's go for rating here. Each week on the show, we try to establish when you should go and see this movie, as opposed to a number or like a thumb or whatever. So we have a scale that goes from IMAX, theater, dollar theater, Netflix, HBO TV, or just kind of forget about it. So with all that in mind, Mark Johnson, where would you put it on that scale?
I think it should be probably theater. I think you should definitely get out and see it. I think there's a lot of other films I'd put above it right now, but I'd go theater.
Hoban?
I would also say theater. I think I liked it more than you did, Mark, but theater. It definitely deserves to be watched on a big screen and all that.
Yeah, I completely agreed with Mark, I would say theater as well. Abe?
I'd say dollar theater. I mean, it's already been out for a while, so it's probably already, maybe it's a dollar theater. But you should see it on the big screen. You just don't really have to see it right away.
All right. So with all that said and done, that will conclude our review of Warhorse. And generally, we move on to box office segment. But we generally do box office. But box office, we haven't predicted anything for quite a while, so there's no real reason to. But in its place, I'll just say some quick words about the film Contraband from Mark Wahlberg. A movie that we had some fun making fun of in the past, but I saw it, and it's not bad. For a January escapist fun movie, it's not a bad movie. It's fine. It's completely fine what it does. It's like a harder-edged Gone in 60 Seconds is the best way I can put it. And it does what it does, and it does it well enough for a mild recommendation from me.
Glad to hear.
That's where I go with that, so... With that done, let's move on to our retro review, where we try to discuss a couple films that in some way relate to the main feature of the week. And since we talked about Warhorse, I have a few in mind, but anyone else? Mark Johnson, do you have any movies in mind you thought of while watching Warhorse?
Maybe something like Seabiscuit or Black Stallion or any of the other horse movies that have come out recently. The Secretariat. But nothing in particular, no, nothing struck me similar.
Mark Hoban?
Well, it just reminded me of old sort of classic Hollywood films. So I thought of The Yearling, which is a Gregory Peck film.
Oh,
it's about with a boy and a deer, and it's very sweet and heartwarming. Yeah. And I also – I don't think I'll mention the scene, but there's one scene that really reminds me of Gone with the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
Like totally. Yeah. Like I was expecting them to start saying, tomorrow is another day. As God is my witness, I'll never be hungry again.
Yeah, that would have been weird if Joey said that.
He didn't, but he might as well have said it. The scene definitely recalls it.
Rise of the Planet of the Warhorse.
I was thinking they're going to have something like that, where the two horses, they just have on-screen narration.
If the movie made more money, that would have happened, but, you know. Abe, anything in mind?
I thought of Babe, the talking pig.
Mm-hmm. Horse in the City?
No, just the first one. Okay. Because of the duck that was in this movie. Okay. That totally reminded me of Ferdinand. But Anne of Green Gables, Brokeback Mountain because of the sweeping shots.
Anne of Green Gables, that was okay.
Yeah. and Saving Private Ryan. And a little bit of Indian in the Cupboard. I don't know why, but I was like...
That's random.
Yeah. That is random.
I was like,
but
yeah,
you have to explain that.
I like the sentiment of the child's story in Indian in the Cupboard. I remember reading that in like fourth grade, and I was like, I was tearing up at the end. When Omri opens the case and he's back to like this plastic toy Indian. I was like, no, Omri. Anyway.
Movies I had in mind were movies that kind of, from last year, that had that kind of sentiment quality to it, but kind of rose above it just because of the quality of the... Well, first I'm going to say We Bought a Zoo, which I don't think rises above it, but it's still, it's a decent movie. It's a movie I completely understand why it came out on Christmas Day, because it's completely for families and it's very, very sweet. And the other is The Help. I had not seen until during the winter break, and I was really into it, and I think it's because of the power of the acting in that movie, which rises above how the movie kind of, it doesn't necessarily sidestep racial politics, but it doesn't go into heavier territory, and I don't think it tries to, just like I don't think War Horse tries to be something darker like Munich or Saving Private Ryan. It does what it does because that's the movie it's trying to be, and I think The Help kind of does the same thing, where it addresses some issues in a light sort of way, but I think it has strong acting in it that kind of makes it better. I can see why it became so popular during the summer. And Empire of the Sun, another Spielberg film,
mm-hmm.
which with young Batman, with young Christian Bale, because of how that movie kind of handles war and from a child's perspective, opposed to a horse's perspective. But I really like that movie. That's one of those Spielberg movies that I think doesn't get enough love. All right, so normally we do a little bit of game time, but because we're recording on the day before the Golden Globes, which are tonight, we're recording this in the morning, we figured we'd actually run through the nominees and kind of do a little prediction fun, see how that works out. And in the show notes, I guess, since this will come out after the Golden Globes, we'll maybe have like a winner's list or something like that so you can have something to compare it to. But... So with that in mind, I'm going to start from kind of the bottom and I'll lead up to the higher categories. So that means I'm going to start with best foreign film. And since we have Mark Johnson of War Contenders here, I mean, the man knows.
The man.
I'll have him lead off his predictions. And then we can say what's on our mind. But I'll just read the nominees here. Best foreign language film, The Flowers of War, In the Land of Blood and Honey, The Kid with a Bike, my favorite of Adam Gentry's, I believe. A Separation, and The Skin I Live In, a favorite of Gerard and Adam Gentry's, I believe.
Well, it looks like A Separation is one of the favorite foreign films of the year critically, but the Golden Globes, Hollywood Foreign Press, they a lot of times like to go with the big star production or bigger names. So my prediction for this one was In the Land of Blood and Honey, which is Angelina Jolie's directorial debut.
Interesting choice. Because I know that movie hasn't been given the best regard, but yeah, because it's the Golden Globes, who knows?
Right. Remember last year they nominated Jolie and Johnny Depp for that The Tourist or whatever that was called.
I was going to mention this.
You mean the third worst movie of 2010.
Right.
That movie.
Quality might not
matter.
They got
destroyed by Ricky Gervais as well.
Oh, right. My God. Yeah, I hated that movie so much. I actually saw A Separation this past week, which is a fantastic movie, by the way. That movie, like, that's one of those where I'm like, I couldn't quite tell you why going in this movie was getting so high regard, given, like, what the subject matter is, but It's just grips you. It's impressive how gripping that movie is. It's just really well done, really well acted, really well told story. So I would pick A Separation. The Skin I Live In, though, that's a really cool movie. Like, I'd really, if that movie won anything, that'd be awesome. But I don't see that winning just because it's a horror movie. That's the way to boil it down to. It's hard to kind of see that winning things just because it's hard to look past certain things sometimes. But
that Separation on Rotten Tomatoes, 68 reviews. Every single one of them is positive. There isn't a single negative review. Yeah. I think it's the highest rated film of 2011 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
I haven't seen it, but
it's very good, Mark. You would,
I'm sure it is.
Once it hits your area, go check it out. That's fantastic. That's I guess I can mention the nations of these: The Flowers of Wars for China and Blood, The Land of Blood and Honeys. Where is it set? It's set
in Bosnia.
Bosnia, right? Yeah. That's made by Jolie. Kid with a Bike is from Belgium. A Separation is Iranian. Skin I Live In is from Spain.
I'm throwing my hat into the A Separation.
All right. Let's see. Next up, best animated film. And we have The Adventures of Tintin, Arthur Christmas, Cars 2, Puss in Boots, and Rango. I can say right now that I'm all for Rango all the time.
Yeah. I was going for that, but I was thinking that people aren't really going to remember it. But I'm still going to go with it anyway. I think that it'll win.
Rango is actually my favorite of that group. Yep. But I'm predicting what will win, and I'm going to go with Adventures of Tintin. Yeah, I think Steven Spielberg's going to win out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like it would be between those two. I went with Rango also.
Okay.
Well, we'll see. Let's see. Okay, now we have best screenplay, and this is a combination of adapted and original mm-hmm. screenplay, as opposed to the Oscars, which has them separated. But the nominees here, we have The Artist by Michael Hazanavicius, Michelle Hazanavicius. I think I said the first name wrong.
Yeah.
The Descendants.
The easier part.
The Descendants by Alexander Payne, Nat Faxon, and Jim Rash, the Dean on Community. The Ides of March from George Clooney, Grant Heslov, Bo Williman. Midnight in Paris from Woody Allen, Moneyball from Steve Zalian, Sword from Stan Chervin.
I gotta put my money on Moneyball. It's been getting some pretty good stuff so far, so that's where I'm thinking that the winner is gonna be.
I think this is an Allen year. It was Midnight in Paris.
Yeah.
I'm gonna actually go with The Descendants. I think that one has the edge.
Yeah, it's not surprising that all three of you went with something different, because of all the categories tonight, the one I'm most interested in seeing the outcome of is screenplay, because like you mentioned, there is no adapted, there is no original. It's all the favorites into one category.
Mm-hmm.
Any one of them can walk away the winner, and I would not be surprised. The Ides of March, probably the least of the five.
Yeah.
But again, with George Clooney, he had the record-setting amount of nominations. This time, I think he was nominated for four different things, breaking the Golden Globe record. So any one of them really could win. I went with The Descendants, but Moneyball seems to be the hot pick right now. Mm-hmm. Any of them.
I know Clooney was nominated for performance for The Descendants, and he was also nominated for director, and then right here. But what was the fourth one?
He's a producer on something, maybe. Let me see here. The Descendants, he was up for...
Producer on Ides of March, isn't he?
He's up for director
Oh, I see.
Yeah, right. He's also a producer on Ides of March.
Right, so I think it's picture director for Ides of March.
Oh, picture is the one.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
Okay, that's amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
He's a real renaissance man, that Clooney. The Clooney.
And they love Clooney, too.
The Clooney.
They do.
All right. Next, we have Best Director. Now, from this point on, I stopped caring about choosing what I think is going to win, and I've only gone with what I want to win, so I'm just putting that out there right now.
You're going to lose the game.
It's not much of a game. So okay.
Sometimes that can work out better for you.
Yeah, sometimes it can work out better for my course models. But, okay, so Best Director, we have Woody Allen for Midnight in Paris, George Clooney for The Ides of March, Michelle Hazanavicius for The Artist, Alexander Payne for The Descendants, and Martin Scorsese for Hugo. I have gone for Scorsese for Hugo.
Yeah, I love that. That would be awesome. I went with Hazanavicius, or however.
Yes,
I've also heard it Hazanavishu. So I don't know.
I'm French pronouncing it.
But either way, the director for The Artist is what I went with.
I went with that one, too. But I would love to see Allen or Scorsese win.
Oscar says he would make my night.
I also was with went with Hasanovicius. I kind of feel like he would be the most likely winner. I will also mention that it's a little odd that Steven Spielberg is not in this category. It's a little bit of a snub. You know, he didn't get nominated for, well, I don't know if people even thought he would be nominated for Tintin, but he wasn't nominated for War
Horse.
They
really wanted Clooney to show up. I think that's
right. Exactly. That's the surprise in that field.
They really wanted Clooney to be there. So. Okay, so now we have Best Performance by an Actress in a Supporting Role in a Motion Picture, and we have Berenice Bejo for The Artist, Jessica Chastain for The Help, Janet McTeer for Albert Nobbs, Octavia Spencer for The Help, and Shailene Woodley for The Descendants.
This is where I got help from Mark Johnston and with Octavia Spencer for The Help.
Well, now you know who I picked. So yeah, that's I have a feeling she's going to steamroll through the award season.
I went with Berenice Bejo for The Artist, actually. Again, what I'd like to win.
Yeah,
I went with Berenice Bejo, but this category is not set in stone. It could be almost anybody. I also would have liked if Melissa McCarthy had been nominated, but she wasn't, so
for
I was a little bit sad about that.
Yeah, for Bridesmaids, yeah.
For Bridesmaids, yeah.
Okay, so next up we have Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role, and we have Kenneth Branagh for My Week with Marilyn, Albert Brooks for Drive, Jonah Hill for Moneyball, Viggo Mortensen with Beard for A Dangerous Method, and Christopher Plummer for Beginners.
Gotta go with Christopher Plummer. I really liked him in Beginners. I really like that movie overall.
Yeah, that would seem to be the front runner. I would also pick Christopher Plummer.
I'm locked in on Albert Brooks for Drive.
I also have Plummer. I think he like Spencer might. We might see those same two winning throughout the season, but Plummer seems like a safe bet. Brooks, you never know with Brooks though. That's an interesting.
That'd be awesome if he did win. Because I think that's
if there was a second choice, I would go with Albert Brooks. I mean, to win. Yeah. Another thing I have to comment on is Viggo Mortensen being nominated for A Dangerous Method. That's a little odd. I haven't seen him getting very much love for that performance. And I saw A Dangerous Method. So personally, I thought he was adequate. I people have different reactions to this film. I actually liked Keira Knightley's performance in that. I thought actually she was so like manic and sort of, I mean, look at me, I'm acting. I actually kind of, it made me interested in the film. So I thought Viggo Mortensen, it's a very subtle performance. I'm shocked that they would even recognize it because it's so like non-actorly. It's very quiet, but it's interesting. I mean, he's a great actor, so I don't resent it. It's just a little odd.
Since you, since you brought up A Dangerous Method, I now have to ask, how was Michael Fassbender's penis in that movie?
No, it did not make an appearance, actually. Okay. It could have. There was a love scene, but it
with spanking. No, okay. That's not a love scene. All right. Best Performance by an Actress in a Motion Picture, Musical or Comedy. We have Jodie Foster for Carnage, Charlize Theron for Young Adult, Kristen Wiig for Bridesmaids, Michelle Williams for My Week with Marilyn, and Kate Winslet for Carnage.
I went with Kristen Wiig. I think that it's pretty strong that she's showing up on this list, even though Bridesmaids came out a long time ago. So I went with Kristen Wiig.
I have Michelle Williams for My Week with Marilyn.
How has she been doing in these awards? Has she been winning a lot?
She's won a lot of critics' awards.
She has? Okay.
A lot of critic ones. We haven't seen too much of the Guild's just nominees so far, but as far as critic awards, yeah, she's one of the, along with probably Viola, probably have won the two most in that category. More so than Streep, if I'm right, my chart, which I can look up here, but yeah.
I sort of think that Michelle Williams might win, but I'm gonna actually go with Kristen Wiig. I really would like to see her win this award, and I think there is a fair amount of support behind her.
Yeah, I'd say I went with Kristen Wiig as well, and because of the Golden Globes, I think it's likely, actually.
Exactly. Yeah, that's really the reasoning why, too. It's a little bit more fun, and so I was like, I think she'd make a pretty good speech, so I think that they're going to give it to her.
She'd make a good speech.
I haven't seen Carnage, but seeing Jodie Foster and Kate Winslet on this list, I'm not impugning their performances because I haven't even seen them yet, but I feel a little bit like, okay, they're famous. The people wanted to see Jodie Foster and Kate Winslet show up, so they got nominated. They're not as I haven't seen a whole lot of love for their performances until now.
I see them being nominated. I can see them for Golden Globes. I understand it. I've seen the movie.
Right. I get it. Yes. But I think the chances of Jodie Foster or Kate Winslet walking away with this award is like almost nothing.
Yeah, I agree with that. But with that said, I do think they're quite good in Carnage, so I can see why the Golden Globes would nominate them.
Mm-hmm.
I just did a quick count. Out of the 35 critic awards that I've followed on my site, Michelle Williams has won 10 of them.
Okay.
In that category. Wow. So it's pretty good showing so far.
How about Meryl Streep? How many has she won?
I just left the page. Let me go back real quick.
Mark Hovind, I'm surprised you didn't choose Charlize Theron for...
Well, I thought my own personal feeling is that she's one of my favorites, but I'm trying to pick who.
Oh, yeah,
you're
trying. I forgot.
I'm trying to pick who will win.
All right. For Meryl Streep, she's won two or three. I'm sorry. She won three.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So best performance by an actor in motion picture, musical or comedy. We have Jean Dujardin in The Artist, Brendan Gleeson for The Guard, Joseph Gordon-Levitt for 50-50, Ryan Gosling for Crazy Stupid Love, and Owen Wilson for Midnight in Paris. Personally, I'm going with Brendan Gleeson for The Guard. That movie is hilarious, and he's fantastic in it.
That's probably my favorite nomination on the entire board, is that they got him in there.
It's kind of unexpected, yeah.
It is,
yeah.
But if Colin Farrell can win for In Bruges, then I'm picking Brendan Gleeson for The Guard.
And I went with, my wife says it's Dujardin. Is that how you say it? I don't know. She took French in high school. So, Dujardin or Dujardin.
I'm not going to insult your wife on this podcast.
How do you say it? You know?
Dujardin. I've heard Dujardin.
Well, we'll find out
out
for sure tonight, I guess. Yeah. But I went with Dujardin.
Yeah, I went with that pick as well.
From The Artist, yeah. Same. I also went with Jean Dujardin.
If he wins and dances on stage, I'll be happy.
Right.
Best performance by an actress in motion picture drama. We have Glenn Close for Albert Nobbs, Viola Davis for The Help, Rooney Mara for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Meryl Streep for The Lady with the Iron Tattoo, and Tilda Swinton for We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Thanks again, Mark. I went with Viola Davis.
Viola Davis, yes. I went with the same thing.
I really wish I've seen We Need to Talk About Kevin, because I've really wanted to. It just has not spread here yet, but I went with Viola Davis for The Help as well.
My initial prediction on this was actually Meryl Streep. I posted my predictions about a week ago. I went with Meryl Streep, but tonight when I do my live blog, I'll have all my predictions up there too. I switched over to Viola Davis because I have her for Oscar, and I should have had her for critics, and so I'm not going to make that mistake again. I'll have her tonight as well.
Okay, next up we have Best Performance by an Actor in a Motion Picture Drama. We have George Clooney in The Descendants, Leonardo DiCaprio in J. Edgar, Michael Fassbender and Michael Fassbender's Penis for Shame, Ryan Gosling for Crazy Stupid March, and Brad Pitt for Moneyball.
This one, I went with Pitt in Moneyball, even though I'm not too sure if he's going to win.
So I mentioned this earlier in the podcast, but I'm picking George Clooney to win. But I would be more than happy to see Brad Pitt win.
Yeah, that's my sentiments exactly. I'm kind of rooting for Pitt now in this spot, but I think they, you know, with setting the record with Clooney, I think they're going to want to honor him somewhere. So
right.
I'm going Clooney on this one.
I pick Clooney just because I generally want him to win. That said, we've already established that, yeah, Brad Pitt's very good too. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't be upset.
And notice, just point out, Ryan Gosling was nominated twice for Ides of March in this category and Crazy Stupid Love.
The wrong movies he was nominated for.
Yeah, exactly. This actually just pits Rusty against Daniel Ocean.
Thank you for that. It puts Magneto against Jack from Titanic, so... That classic combo, too. It's not as well conceived as Rusty from Daniel Ocean. Next, we have Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. We have The Artist, Bridesmaids, 50-50, Midnight in Paris, or My Week with Marilyn, which is apparently a comedy.
Yes, please, thank you. This is one of the idiocies of the Golden Globes. There's no reason why My Week with Marilyn should be in this category. It's not a comedy.
And they turned down The Help. The Help tried to squeeze in as a comedy as well here. And they turned it down for comedy and made them go drama. But I would say, if any, you know, I wouldn't say either a comedy, but I laughed a lot during The Help. I mean, Jessica Chastain's character, Octavia Spencer. So Octavia Spencer. They would, it's strange that they would turn down the help, but then take My Week with Maryland here. So
I heard one thing. One rationale I heard was that because Viola Davis is being nominated for Best Actress in a Drama, if they had put The Help in comedy, she would have to be nominated for Best Actress in a comedy, and Viola Davis's performance is anything but a comedy. So that's the rationale they gave behind that.
Which that makes sense. A lot of
sense. I went with The Artist.
I went with The Artist also.
Yeah, I think The Artist is a shoe in here.
As I'm not trying, I went for 50-50.
Regrettably, I think that's the last choice, but it was a good film, I agree, but I think it's the least likely to win that award.
Yeah, but I went with it. It's not going to win, but I'm happy it's in there. I'm happy it's getting recognition. I'm glad Joseph Gordon-Levitt got nominated as well.
And another thing I want to mention too, this category, what a difference a year makes. This category is very strong. All five films are excellent. And I will direct your attention to last year's nominees. The Tourist and Burlesque for Best Picture.
What won last year? What did Toy Story win last year?
No, The Kids Are All Right, which is a decent pick.
I loved that movie. That was high on my list last year. Okay, lastly, Best Motion Picture Drama, The Descendants, The Help, Hugo, The Ides of March, Moneyball, and War Horse. Funny how there's six for this category.
I would love for Hugo to win.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be The Help. So thanks again, Mark Johnson.
I went for Hugo, of course. So.
Yeah. So I went with The Descendants. I think The Descendants is the most. I think it's going to win this award.
Yeah, I don't know where you got The Help from, but
seen a lot of The Help on your site.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant from my prediction.
Like, No.
Okay. Yeah, The Help's a great. That's a great upset pick. I think that's possible, but I think the Golden Globes a lot of times likes to set up the showdowns for Oscar, and this year it seems like The Descendants and The Artist are the two most likely winners for Best Picture for the Oscar, so I think they have the perfect opportunity to set that up by going The Artist for comedy and then The Descendants for drama.
Sounds good. I agree.
Yeah. All right, so that concludes our prediction segment for the Golden Globes, which will be announced tonight, Sunday, on the 15th, and so by the time you hear the show, the winners will of course be announced, so you can make fun of all of us.
you can see just how intelligent my predictions are, and then of course view my site more often. You know how that works.
Yes, great plug.
So let's see. That's going to bring us to what we're going to talk about next week, and we get to do a box office prediction for the first time in weeks now, but. We're going to talk about Haywire, the new Steven Soderbergh action film starring Gina Carano of MMA fame, among many others, including Michael Fassbender, Michael Douglas, Antonio Banderas, Channing Tatum, Bill Paxton, Ewan McGregor. It's a star-filled cast.
It is.
But yeah, with all that in mind, let's try to do a box office prediction for Haywire of all movies. This could be tough. I'll just set things up right now. We still have currently Contraband, Beauty and the Beast are out, and then next week you have the release of Underworld 4 and George Lucas's Red Tails. It's fun to say that. So Haywire. Oh man, predicting the spot on this alone is going to be difficult. Let's see.
I'm going to go with the second, and I'll say $22 million.
Okay. I love Abe. I'm gonna go fourth and say, I don't know. I'll go eight million.
I'll go third.
All right.
And I'll say, well, is this Price is Right rules where if you're all over, I go a dollar, I win?
Yeah.
Okay, then I'll go $1, and Hoban, don't cock block me with $2. No $2 bets here.
Do it.
All right. Well, I'll go with $7 million. I'll go render Abe.
There you go.
Or not Abe. Aaron.
Aaron. Yeah. Mine was the highest.
22.
No. 22.
21. All right. Okay. So we can laugh at Abe next week, but this week that's gonna do it for Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work at my personal blog site, thecodeofzeke.com, where you can find all my written reviews, as well as whysoblue.com, where you can find all our latest Blu-ray reviews. You can also find me on Twitter at twitter.com/AaronsPS3. Abe?
You can find more of my work at walrusmoose.blogspot.com. Two animals, walrusmoose.blogspot.com. and twitter.com/walrusmiss.
Mark Johnson.
You can find all of my award predictions at awardcontenders.com. Also reviews and trailers, etc. there. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at awardcontenders.
I want to just second Mark's award contender site just because it's very good. It's very good way to, you know, really keep up.
Very thorough. Yeah.
Yeah, really, and you update like constantly.
Yeah, he's working nonstop, and like it helps that, because you know you see all the big awards, you see the Oscars, the Golden Globes, but it's neat to see all the, you know, the smaller awards that don't go as well publicized. That's awardcontenders.com is a very good site to just get all that information out there. So that's kudos, Mark.
Thank you.
Yeah. And Marco.
And you can find more of my work at fastfilmreviews.wordpress.com. That's fastfilmreviews, all one word. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Mark_Hoban.
Great. And yeah, you can find all the episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe on iTunes. All of them are there. You can also find all of them at hhwlod.com, where you can check out our show as well as the other shows like Walking Dead TV Podcast, Legion of Dudes. There's just a good bunch of shows to talk about comics and games and movies and stuff. They're just a good bunch of guys over there. You can also find some of the newest episodes at outnow.podomatic.com and a few exclusives. And you can email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com, and, you know, make sure to remind Abe as to why horses are important for, you know, glue. And, you know, commend Mark once again for, you know, his site and his appearance on our show, as well as Mark Hoban for, you know, making his reviews fast and quick. So, finally, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where you can like our page, and we always update it with all our stuff. It's fun to keep the updates going and, you know, have people interact as they please. So, that's that. And that's all of that, really. So, until next time, so long.
And take care.
Is that wrong? It was, and goodbye.
That's a hard one to remember.
That's a recording.